With all the important things happening in the world today, with all the dangerous and weird things happening in the world today, you might wonder why I chose to sort of devour the topic itself of what is a sermon, to preach a sermon about sermons. Well, the reason why, especially at the beginning of what will be my last year with you here, is that it looks like for the near future, at the very least, we will continue with having half-time ministers. Ministers like myself who will be here half the Sundays, and on the other Sundays it will be something else. And so we thought this would be a good time to take a look at the worship service itself so that those something else is as good as possible for all of us. And I'd like to thank the Worship Guild for all the hard work they've done since I've been here and for the work that they'll be doing in the future. The fundamental purpose of Unitarian Universalist worship is to allow our Unitarian Universalist principles to become better understood and acted upon in individual members, in the congregation, in the world. So I'd like to take a look at some of the elements of our worship, finally focusing on the sermon. Still one of my favorite shows, obscure animated show on Comedy Central in the 90s called Dr. Katz, Professional Therapist. Anybody here watch that? Okay. Dr. Katz was a therapist, and all his clients were stand-up comedians. And since every stand-up comedian is dire in need of therapy, it really worked out pretty well. But Dr. Katz also had a slacker son, okay? And the slacker son one day asked Dr. Katz if he could borrow Dr. Katz's pride and joy, his Mercedes. Well, he reluctantly agreed because, let's face it, the son didn't have all that many dates and he wanted to be as supportive of his son as possible. So he loaned the Mercedes to his son and he went out Saturday night, and then Dr. Katz got in the car sometime on Sunday, smelled something very strange. He suspected he knew what it was and he was right. The brakes had been completely burned out. And he went to his son and said, "Son, did you drive all night with the emergency brake on?" And the son said, "It depends on your definition of emergency." And so it is with joys and sorrows. It depends on your definition of joy and sorrow. For instance, it may be a joy to you merely to hear the sound of your own voice. This may be a sorrow to others. So here is the key for all speaking in any aspect of worship. What is not important is your need to say it. What is important is the congregation's need to hear it. Now, that doesn't mean that we should not be personal or confessional or humorous. We do need to hear about your health and the personal changes in your life, these joys and sorrows. But we do not need to hear about your routines and meanderings. There would be a special part in the service if we wanted to hear that. Though I will take an exception for a cough drop. I think that you know, as a preacher, I would much rather, you know, hear the slight sucking sound than the loud coughing sound during worship. So there are always exceptions. And the fact that there are always exceptions is what makes joys and sorrows a constant negotiation. The rule of thumb, what moved your needle during the week? Did it give you a high or a low? We're interested in the highs and lows, not so much as you trek across the plains of daily life. And remember, almost no one will object to whatever you say if you say it briefly. Joys and sorrows and the negotiations therein is a function of a smaller congregation. Growing congregations always have to modify their joys and sorrows as they grow. And it may be a useful task for us to say, how do joys and sorrows, indeed, how does all of worship welcome the next generation of Unitarian Universalists? Now, announcement of an event may be a joy or a sorrow, or it may be simply using joys and sorrows inappropriately. If you have to say, I know this isn't a joy or sorrow, but I have this very important announcement to make, I have a piece of advice, don't make it. But announcements of all kinds and all kinds of public information ought to be distributed within a Unitarian Universalist community, but not necessarily as part of worship. We have a communications committee. We have a fantastic new website. We're trying to learn how to tweet and twiddle and all those things. Let's examine all the ways that we communicate. Small congregations have a tendency to make worship carry too big a load of their communication. We need to let worship be worship and communicate in other ways that are actually easier to hear. Yes, you may applaud. I'll be getting to that in a moment. Also, I won't address it in detail now, but it's very important. How do we address family and intergenerational worship when we have broader, more intergenerational congregants? It's kind of a chicken and egg sort of thing. We need to be welcoming to families, but it's hard to do that when we're represented mostly by people who are of the Bob Dylan generation. How many of you were here during the very first sermon I gave? Okay. You may recall that at the end of that first sermon, there was applause. That felt great. I was very surprised and heartened by that. And then came my second sermon, and I thought that was pretty good. But hey, no applause. What happened? The key, of course, is spontaneity. Spontaneity in Unitarian Universalism or any kind of worship. No spontaneity and the experience is dry and rote. Too much and there lies chaos. And the right amount is another thing that's open to negotiation. Such as the difference between performance and offering. When artists and musicians and speakers share their skills and their gifts in the congregation, in worship, it's a different order of giving and relating than if you're playing in a bar on Saturday night or if you're on Carnegie Hall or something like that. There's a difference between performance and offering your gifts. However, to muddy the waters again, and I love muddy waters, by the way, is that if you're in an Orthodox situation, the music and speaking is delivered as a means to the divine. In Unitarian Universalism, music and literature is the divine. There's no intermediary. We love music because we know music is not a way toward God. It is God, if anything is. The great literature is not a means to God. It is God, if anything is. Our relationship with each other. So that, again, blurs the difference between performance and offering. There's a difference in intention of the giver and how it's received, but we don't always think and keep it in mind. The song that I gave was much more of a performance than I usually give, clearly. But it was also offered. Also, silence can be the most profound response to either a worshipful presentation or to an artistic one. And so can laughter and applause and shouting out. The key is it a heartfelt, spontaneous response, and not a merely expected ritual. I find laughter a very welcome response to my sermons. That's because you laugh in the right places. Laughter could also be a terrible response to a sermon. I did the math this week. I don't precisely know, but I've delivered about 900 Sunday sermons. And this is what I've learned. Well, the first things I learned was one of the first lessons that any preacher should learn. It's the lesson of St. Stephen. St. Stephen was the first Christian martyr. And St. Stephen was converted to Christianity, and he went back into the synagogue, and he preached a Christian sermon, and he said, "Oh, you stiff-necked and uptight people, where has there not been a prophet that you have not persecuted?" Thus, St. Stephen became the first Christian martyr. What a speaker wants to say is not important. What the congregation needs to hear is what is important. And when a speaker finds a way to say what the congregation needs to hear, that's preaching. That's ministry. A sermon is delivered at a particular time and a place to a particular gathering. Even if the sermon is written out and delivered on different occasions, every delivery of a sermon is different, a unique experience. I know I've delivered similar sermons at different times at different audiences, but it's always different. It's like the old philosophical thing, you can't step into the same river twice. You can't preach the same sermon twice. Also, it says in the Bible, many are called, but few are chosen. That is, the desire to preach isn't sufficient. People also have to have the desire to hear you. And this is not freely given to everyone. Membership in a Unitarian Universalist congregation does not bring with it pulpit privileges. If you are chosen, it is useful to do some preparation and understanding about the form of the sermon. A sermon is not like any other form of public speaking. Experience in other forms is helpful, but not entirely. And also, preaching is not as monumental as it can sometimes sound. And when we invite outside guest speakers, the rules are a little different. You can't necessarily expect a person who is an expert in a particular part of history or another religion or a social issue to be well-versed in Unitarian Universalist principles. We bring that person here because we believe that what he or she has to say about the work they're doing exemplifies our principles. We're not expecting them to preach. We're expecting them to present something that is worshipful to us. But for Unitarian Universalists addressing each other, then we can expect a connection to our principles and a respect for the needs of the congregation, not the needs of the speaker. Oh, and by the way, it's not 20 times more difficult to preach 20 sermons a year than it is to preach one. One of the great enjoyments of ministry is to build a dialogue with the congregation through preaching. It sometimes takes the pressure off of any particular Sunday. It's like in baseball. There's a game tomorrow. If you strike out this week, maybe next Sunday, you hit a home run. If you get only one shot, it's a lot harder. The best advice I ever got about preaching is, don't try to tell everything you know in one sermon, because you might. But really, preaching is 6 days of listening and 20 minutes of speaking. I do a lot of my sermon preparation while walking my dogs. I have the topic in my head, and I sort of imagine myself preaching it, and I sort of get the flow down. And sometimes it comes really easily, and by the time I walk back from the dog walk, I'm almost like I'm transcribing the sermon that I played in my head while I'm walking the dog. That's really easy. It doesn't happen all the time, but once in a while it does. Also, I always work ahead. I never do sermon prep on Saturday. The only thing I do on Saturday is go over my notes. And I use notes. I don't write it out as a manuscript, and I don't memorize it. And sometimes I've done both. But I found that the notes work best for me. Also, I have a basic structure for every sermon I do. It's the same structure. But by the time it's done, it may not look at all like the structure that I've begun with. But it's a way to get started. really, listen to the congregation. They really create your sermons. Just tell them your response to what they've been telling you. Now, here's my offer. If there is interest, and this isn't for everybody, I would be happy to offer a how to preach workshop for members. So that instead of when the minister isn't here, it's not like, I can do this Sunday, but I can preach that Sunday. I can do the sermon that Sunday. This is an old tradition in Universalism. They had regularly certified lay preachers in the Universalist Church. Now, I know, again, this isn't for everybody, but I know there are some members here who, if they put their minds to it and prepared, could provide not just the program, but good preaching for a number of those Sundays when the minister isn't here. And I know some already have. Now, if this is at all an interest to you, see me at coffee hour and we can talk about it, just to see. You know, I'd be interested in doing that. We could do it in one evening. I could spend years on it. I could do it on one. I could do two or three. One thing we could do is you could come and say, I have this idea for a sermon. And we could all workshop everybody's sermon during the course of it. You know, the flame and chalice is the Unitarian Universalist symbol. It's a good yin-yang symbol. And it's clear to me that the chalice and the flame need each other. The flame of individual conscience needs the chalice of community to protect it, to nurture it, to allow it to give off light and warmth. And likewise, the worshiping community and the respectful relationships that we build with each other. For we come from a variety of religious and non-religious backgrounds. Some of us will react with horror to an element of worship that others of us will warmly embrace. There is only one way to resolve this, to work respectfully with others. The fire of good worship anneals the chalice of community, and good community builds good worship. It is all connected, as are we, as are we. That simply is the essence of UU worship. What's next?